this?
Sure. I don't know if it's my disposition, but I'm not quite as optimistic. I don't strongly disagree that they are less risky, or that they are risky, sorry. I think these are still risky, poor client groups for any private sector provider, particularly banks and microfinance institutions. But the thing that's really interesting, and this is our general hypothesis for our work in this space, is that the perception amongst the private sector is that they are extremely risky. And I think that this perception is probably wrong. So if you've worked in the space like Lev has for a while, you start to work out that although these guys are poor, they're not necessarily long-term displaced, and they're relatively vulnerable. There are some demand signals that suggest that they are really good, viable clients, and not that dissimilar to poor rural populations in other parts of sub-Saharan Africa, which is the market group that I know quite well. But when you first get to the private sector, you have to do a lot of convincing work. So we first started talking to different private sector financial service providers in Rwanda a couple of years ago, and they quite strongly stereotyped in the way that Mayad is talking about what a particular refugee client might look like. So our first step was to try and show them the business case was there. So we went into the field and collected some data around how much refugees earned and from what income sources to show different banking clients that they were viable client segments. And other interesting demand signals started to pop up as well that showed that refugees really could be a good client to a banking service provider. So in Rwanda, for instance, 43% of the people we surveyed had a secondary education or higher. Really good demand signal that they could be a good entrepreneur in the future. The income level in Rwanda was also really interesting. So 90% of the households that we surveyed were still poor, but they earned over $29 a month, which is about the same level as the median financially included person in Rwanda. So if you can financially include a rural Rwandan person, then why couldn't you financially include someone who's living in a refugee settlement in Rwanda? And there were other good demand signals as well. So lots of refugees, as I'm sure everybody in the room is well aware, live in urban areas. So they're most likely working or entrepreneurial or hustling for a living. And again, that's a really good demand signal that they need financial services and could repay a loan. They would use a transaction account or a savings account. In DRC, we've also done some first-hand research. Lots of banks don't accept refugee IDs as a banking ID. But we found out that lots of banks also do, and lots of refugees have a refugee banking ID to use and present when they're trying to access a financial service. So after you present some of the data to the banks, they start to become more interested. But we quickly realized we need to do a little bit more work than that. So we took the banks out of their offices in Kigali and Entebbe and Kampala and into the field. So we took them to refugee camps so they could see and feel the business case themselves. And that's when the scales really dropped from their eyes. And once they started to interact with refugees and start to design products that refugees might need by talking to them, that's when they realized that their risk wasn't quite as high as they might have thought. And then just to push them a little bit further, we incentivize the banks to take some risk by co-sharing some of that risk. So we provide some starter grants and some larger grants to the most promising ideas amongst financial service providers in Rwanda, Uganda, and shortly DRC. So very high risk, I don't think so. Quite risky, yes, but that doesn't mean that there's not a business case there.